Good morning. Our first case today is 2012-1338, Apple v. ITC. Mr. Rosenkranz.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Josh Rosenkranz representing Apple. Your Honors, I'd like to spend the vast majority of my time this morning focusing on validity, and if I can sneak in a minute at the end on the 828 patent, I'd like to try to do that. The 607 patent that the ITC invalidated was Apple's first touchscreen patent. It taught a key invention that drove the iPhone and then the iPad phenomenon. Apple claimed something that no one else had ever done, and I'm reading directly from the claims. The patent claims the ability on a, quote, transparent screen to, quote, detect multiple touches that occur at the same time. Same time, multi-touch. The ITC invalidated this patent.
Which claim are you reading from? You said you're reading from the claim?
From both Claim 1, Your Honor, and Claim 10. They both have exactly the same
And just to be sure, you're on the 607 patent.
I am, yes, Your Honor.
And where is this language about the transparent screen that you're talking about?
It is the very first sentence of the preamble. A touch panel comprising a transparent capacitive sensing medium.
Oh, so when you said transparent screen, you were not quoting from Claim 1 like you suggested.
Oh, I'm sorry. Transparent was a quote. So let me do this again. Transparent, and then it's got a quote, detect multiple touches, and then later on that occur at the same time. Now, the ITC invalidated this patent on the basis of two prior art references. One was an article about an opaque screen with a wish list at the end. Maybe we can go transparent. The second was a patent that was not designed to do, and in fact said that it could not do, what the 607 patent claimed. And certainly neither one of them enabled the 607 patent. Only Apple figured out same-time multi-touch.
It's telling. The first reference you just spoke about, that's a smart skin?
Yes, Your Honor, and that's on the obviousness side. And then the second one is Persky. Now, it's telling. Smart skin was out for 5 years before Apple came out with its invention. Persky had been submitted 4 years earlier. In that intervening time, no one else had figured out same-time multi-touch. But the moment Apple unveiled its invention, we all know what happened.
Why isn't the reference to a transparent screen in the smart skin reference a suggestion or a teaching?
Well, Your Honor, it is a wish list. It says one day with future work we might be able to figure out how to do.
Well, you call it a wish list. Somebody else would call it a suggestion. Why isn't it a suggestion in the sense of 103?
The reason, Your Honor, is that it's not easy to do. So let me explain. And this relates both to smart skin and anticipation, Persky. I'll start with Persky, but this relates to both, Your Honor. It is simply not an easy thing to take copper wire, so it's one thing to do multi-touch with copper wire in an opaque medium. To change that copper wire into ITO is a very, very difficult thing to do, to implement. The reason is copper is highly conductive. It is the conductive circuit of choice. ITO has 1/100th the conductivity. That means the electrons slog through.
No, let me stop you, because you said, I'm going to start with Persky, but I didn't understand this to be your argument raised with regard to Persky. I understood your argument to me whether there's written description support in the parent, and for you to be focusing on whether it applies and discloses multiple touches simultaneously, the pinching and stuff. And so I didn't understand your copper discussion that you're giving now to be relevant at all to anything you said about Persky. Am I misunderstanding where you're
going? I think you are, Your Honor. And it's my fault. Let me explain why it's relevant. Persky is actually a great example of why it's so hard to do what Apple claimed and what Persky refers to but does not.
Well, what is it that you think Persky lacks? The only thing I understood from your brief was the multiple touches in the algorithm. You thought the algorithm wasn't sufficiently disclosed in Persky to effectuate the multiple touches in a timely fashion, a fast enough fashion. Isn't that at the heart of your argument? I mean, isn't that exactly your argument? Am I misunderstanding
it? No, let me rephrase it, Your Honor, but I think Your Honor is correct. What Persky does not teach is what I referred to earlier from the claim language as same-time multi-touch. Persky does make a reference, and by the way, let me just back up, Persky was not even trying to do
same-time multi-touch. But you do realize in column 14, lines 18 and 19, Persky says, this algorithm is preferably able to detect more than one finger touch at the same time.
Yes, I do.
So it at least purports to disclose an algorithm which does exactly what you're saying it doesn't do.
Your Honor, I was just going to say it does refer to that. It does say that it is preferably able to do it. And then the next three paragraphs, Persky explains that he actually didn't figure out how to do it. So let me just walk through it. Your Honor was correct to refer to Persky as saying at the same time, multiple touches at the same time. That was the only time Persky ever says at the same time. You go down to the next, what happens is Persky describes three methods, three embodiments, and not a single one of them does multi-touch at the same time. So, it says, when you read on, the first method is the slower method. It's the only one the ALJ relied upon. It says, and this is lines 37 to 38, it enables...
Column 14.
The only column in Persky that's relevant, column 14. It says, lines 37 to 38, this method enables the detection of multiple finger touches. He doesn't say at the same time. Now, why doesn't he say at the same time? Because you move up a sentence earlier at line 31, he says there's a disadvantage to this method. It has too many steps, literally 100 times as many steps to do Persky's first method as it is to do Persky's faster method. The faster method, now in line 53, he says, has a different problem. It leads to ambiguity. Now, ambiguity is the opposite of multi-touch, same-time multi-touch. And even if Persky did disclose, did purport to do same-time multi-touch, he certainly didn't enable it. And this is the important point, just stepping back from
it. Part of the problem is, I mean, we have this case law, I didn't even know it existed until I got to this case, that says these patents for anticipation purposes are presumed to be enabling for everything they disclose. So to the extent that he is purporting to disclose more than one finger touch at the same time and an algorithm that effectuates that, I have to presume that this patent is enabling for that purpose under our law. So, I
agree, Your Honor. So, two ways to get around it. One is, he doesn't actually disclose it. He says it's a preference and then explains that he can't do it. And the second is...
Why does he say he can't do it?
Well, this is just what I was trying to walk through. What he says is, on the slower method,
sure,
it is multi-touch, but he doesn't say at the same time.
But he doesn't say not at the same time. And right above that, he has said... preferably able to detect more than one finger touch at the same time. So what makes you think that when he later talks about multiple fingers, he's now not talking about it at the same time?
Well, because he says that the disadvantage here is that it's so slow, and more specifically...
It's slow, but it doesn't mean it doesn't do it.
Right, so then let me get to the enablement piece. It is a presumption, but it's a rebuttable presumption. There was no testimony that this device actually worked the way Your Honor suggests Persky says it worked. The only testimony in the record was that it didn't work. Only our expert analyzed what Persky supposedly claims to have achieved. And by the way, he doesn't even claim it. If he had created same-time multi-touch, he would certainly have claimed it. But he doesn't even claim it. And so our expert, Dr. Subramanian, goes on at length and explains why it is that Persky does not achieve what Your Honor suggests that Persky describes. Now,
I mean, it seems to me we're talking in Persky about different different detection techniques at different times, but We don't know exactly what we're talking about in terms of time. Are we talking about the difference between, you know, 1/10,000th of a second and 1/10,000,000th of a second?
We're talking about the difference of milliseconds, or and then orders of magnitude less than milliseconds.
No matter what system you are talking about, including Apple's system, there is a difference in time.
There is indeed, Your Honor.
Between the first scan and the second scan of two different touches. So this is kind of all relative, isn't it?
It is, but the relative difference matters. The 607 patent, the specification refers to at the same time meaning from the perspective of the viewer. And Dr. Superman explained...
But that's what I'm getting at, because perhaps there isn't much of a consumer perception. If you're talking about a difference between 1/10,000th of a second and 1/10,000,000th of a second.
And that is, Your Honor, what Dr. Subramanian explains. He explains that the consumer will see the difference between the product with Apple's algorithm and its circuitry, which it had to redesign when it went from copper to ITO, and what Persky describes, or supposedly
now,
describes.
Dr. Subramanian, did he only look at the algorithm and the description at column 14, line 20 through 44? Is that what he was testing?
No, Your Honor. Dr. Subramanian went through each of the three methods.
The thing right after that at column 44 says a faster approach
yes.
is to apply the signal to a group of conductors on one axis, and this seems like exactly how the Apple product works. Yeah. A group can comprise any subset, including all the conductors in that axis, and look for each signal at each one of the conductors on the other axis. Isn't that exactly how the Apple product works? Isn't that how the Apple algorithm actually works?
What the Persky patent says next is there's a problem.
No, wait for my question. Isn't that exactly how the Apple algorithm works?
That is how the Apple algorithm works, but the Apple product works differently.
Well, who cares? We're talking about Apple's product is not an issue in this.
Well, no, I'm sorry. The product that Apple claimed, the invention that
who
Apple claimed.
Who cares what product Apple claimed? All we care about is the claims and the disclosure in that specification. And that disclosure comports identically.
It does not, Your Honor. Apple claimed a product that does multi-touch at the same time and that can accurately detect different touches. Persky says in his second method, which, by the way, the ALJ did not rely upon, that there's a problem with that one, ambiguity. Now, ambiguity is the opposite of multi-touch. The reason Apple's invention was so important, it explains in the specification, is because other products out there, the prior art, had the ambiguity. And let me just, I know I'm running out of time, but I do want to focus for a moment on the objective factors, at least with respect to smart skin, but it also completes the story. No one else figured out how Apple's had to achieve what Apple claimed. No one else. And the moment Apple came out with its product, you had this massive praise in the market, Apple's Magic Touchscreen. It was the invention of the year for Time Magazine, which references specifically the touch screen. There was enormous imitation by others. Now, if Persky had actually disclosed and enabled what Apple had described ultimately in the 607, the world would have been doing that way earlier. And, of course, I haven't even mentioned the commercial success.
Before you go there, counsel, let's go back to the smart scan article that Sony had published prior to the issuance of the Apple patent, and I'm going to A13603, conclusion and direction for future work, what we're calling the wish list, or what we refer to as the wish list. It says, use of transparent electrodes. A transparent smart skin sensor can be obtained by using the indium tin oxide, or a conductive polymer, the ITO. Then it goes on and describes seeking out transparent conductive materials. Now, it seems to me that this is a little bit more than a wish list. Isn't this almost a plan of action for Placida that's directing the Placida to the Apple patent to use the ITO? Because that is central to the Apple patent, the ITO, and then also a transparent screen.
Well, Your Honor, it is general guidance, to use this court's words, But it is not a teaching. And the reason goes back to what I was saying earlier. It is an enormous chore. It entailed redesigning the circuitry to get from copper wire to get ITO to achieve what copper wire does. And SmartSkin does not teach how you design that circuitry. Now, I grant you, Apple did not claim that circuitry, but the device has to work. And Apple claimed a device that does do same-time multi-touch in a way that SmartSkin never taught. I hoped to get to just a minute on...
No, but I'd like to ask you about commercial success, which is where you were a minute ago. I don't understand. In the lower court, the ALJ opinion really only addressed commercial success. It didn't seem to address your other points and secondary consideration. They clearly were in the record, so I don't understand why that is. But nonetheless, on commercial success, his only conclusion was not that Apple's product wasn't successful, but that you all had not demonstrated a nexus between the success and this particular feature. And in fact, there's some, what I think is quite frankly a very cursory expert report that says what the success is attributed to. But here, in your brief, you devote one paragraph to this. You never mention the words nexus. You never explain why his decision is wrong. You only assert, again, the giant numbers for Apple sales. How have you given us anything at all upon which to reverse him? You address this in one paragraph and don't address the basis for which he rejected your commercial success evidence. What am I supposed to do with that?
Well,
I'm very disappointed at the lawyering on this point, because you've got a decent point, but you didn't make the argument. So what do I do?
Well, Your Honor, we did make the argument in the reply brief, but let me just answer the question directly. So first of all, it's not just commercial success, it's also praise. The praise was uniformly directed at, first and foremost, the touchscreen, Apple's magic touchscreen. And that is in part what drove so much of the commercial success. This was Apple's first touchscreen patent. It was described in the record as the key patent for touchscreens. And then the imitation of others. When Motorola and every other major manufacturer...
What does any of this have to do with Nexus? He said the Nexus was attributable to things like iTunes and lots of program availability on the Apple platform. You didn't even argue here, no, that's incorrect. Success is attributable to this particular aspect.
Your Honor, in our reply brief, we did argue that that's incorrect. First of all... Excuse me, Your Honor?
It's a little late in the reply brief.
Especially when it was the basis of the ALJ's decision.
Well, Your Honor, let me just answer the question. So the ALJ the ALJ drew the testimony from a technical expert who admitted that he had absolutely no basis from which to measure consumer demand. He was a technical expert describing the technology, and we did argue in our briefs that that is just not competent evidence. And, this court's precedents on Nexus do not require the court to do away with common sense. The touchscreen was front and center in the marketing, front and center in the praise, and in the imitation. Not just the touchscreen, but imitating this particular invention. And that provides the nexus.
But that wasn't the only thing that might have driven that success. There were a whole host of things, were there not?
It was not the only thing, and we've never argued that it's the only thing, but Nexus doesn't require it to be the only thing that drives success. There is no question, I think, from anyone who understands why someone who owns a Mac, which looks just like an iPad, would buy the iPad. It's because of the intuitive way in which the touch screen works.
Can you just address for a minute the mathematically fitting an ellipse question?
Yes, Your Honor. This is a very, very important patent, and the ALJ adopted a claim construction that no one suggested and that is completely inconsistent with the specification. Apple, Motorola, and the ITC staff all agreed below that mathematically fitting an ellipse where it means calculating the five parameters from the data themselves. Judge Koh agreed, so we're now in this position where we've got two conflicting claim constructions, and Judge Koh is right. No one suggested that the claims called for the ALJ's two-step process, where you somehow first draw an ellipse and then calculate parameters from that ellipse. It actually makes no sense. No one has suggested how in the world you would go about doing it. The preferred embodiment doesn't do it, and everyone agrees that, of course, the preferred embodiment must at least be covered by these claims. And throughout the specification, what you see is calculating parameters directly from the data.
And if you're correct on this, it requires vacating remanding for a new trial at this point on this patent?
Vacating, at a minimum, vacating and remanding for new fact findings from the ALJ who used the wrong construction. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, let's hear from opposing counsel. I'll restore 3 minutes, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Valentine?
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'd like to just briefly start with the anticipation issue on Persky. As the Court noted, the Persky patent does not recite any specific speed limitation with respect to how fast the detection must occur.
Well, I think Mr. Rosenkranz's argument is the first algorithm disclosed in column 14 is too slow to work, and the second algorithm is fast, but admits that it's flawed, that it doesn't work properly because there's ambiguity, which it says, on the rare occasions when multiple searches occur simultaneously at specific locations. So I think his argument is, you know, it may disclose an objective that includes doing this, but it doesn't actually disclose a way of doing it that enables one of skill in the art. So why don't you try to focus on that?
Yes, Your Honor. So as Apple admitted itself in its brief at page 28, the algorithms disclosed are nearly identical in the two patents. And the fact that the so-called faster method may, as Your Honor noted, occasionally have ambiguity is not relevant to the fact whether or not it discloses multi-touch, which is what is required by the claim language. Again, there is no requirement in the claim as to exactly how fast the multi-touch detection must occur. And the faster approach, as Your Honor noted previously, does operate exactly in the same way. So the so-called speed, which the only disclosure Apple even relies on in the disclosure of the 607, is the parallel sensing method, which operates nearly identically to the faster method in the first.
Okay. Also related to anticipation is the separate issue, which I understand is only pertains to Claim 10, but that is whether or not Morag was incorporated by reference into Persky. Is that right?
Correct. So that question actually relates to whether or not the Persky provisional is, whether the Persky patent can rely or can claim back to the Persky provisional as far as its effective reference date. However, Apple waived this argument below. In petitioning for review of
Well, if I don't agree with you that it's waived, let's just get to the heart of the argument because you don't have a lot of time. So I want to skip you over things focusing on what I want to hear about. So why don't you tell me what you understand the standard of law to be with how specific or what you must say in order to incorporate something by reference under our law?
Yes, Your Honor. So the requirement is that the reference be clearly disclosed enough so that it is clear to one reading the patent that application is incorporated by reference. And as the ALJ noted, I'm sorry, I don't have this.
Let me read you a standard, okay? From Advanced Display Systems, to incorporate material by reference, the host document must identify with detailed particularity what specific material it incorporates by reference and clearly indicate where that material is found in the document. It goes on to say, clearly identifying the subject matter which is incorporated and where it is to be found. Expressly incorporates the particular part of the reference. So it's not enough to just say, hey, there might be something else over there you might want to look at. You actually have to identify it with particularity and then say exactly what and where in the reference the important information lies. And my problem is I don't see that being done with regard to Morag. So let's look at the express language in the Persky provisional that incorporates it and see if you can convince me that I'm wrong.
Yes, right. So I believe that the particular language issue is at 16149.
Yes, ma'am.
And the last paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
Where it says, in the present invention, detection of the stylus is done in a method similar to the method described in...
Similar to the method described in. That's, wow, that's awfully touchy-feely, isn't it? I mean, for a standard that requires clear particularity and identification of exacting material in a reference, now we're saying it's something similar to something described somewhere else, okay? And what else does it say?
Well, immediately after this references the specific applications by number, it says, both patents describe a sensing device that is capable of detecting multiple physical objects located on top of the flat screen. And it goes on to say, one of the preferred embodiments is a system built of two transparent foils, one containing a set of vertical conductors and the other a set of horizontal conductors.
Have you ever read an IDS disclosure?
Yes, Your Honor.
Most IDS disclosures used to not only list the patent, but give you a little summary of the patent as well. Are all of those incorporated by reference into a patent?
I don't believe so, Your Honor.
Of course not. No way, right? But I guess my problem is I don't see that disclosure in an IDS as being in any way significantly different from what is stated here. Most of our incorporation by reference cases, quite frankly, have used the words we incorporate by reference. And so to go beyond that, you know, beyond that presumption which exists to this, it just seems like a bit of a stretch for me. I don't know. Is there anything in our law that you can point to that tells me that this is the direction we should go?
I can't, unfortunately, at this time, Ryan. The reason that I'm less than prepared to address this issue is exactly because this issue was never really raised before the commission in the context in which Apple raises it now.
Do you want to move on maybe to the infringement section for us?
Sure.
And I'm going to give you a few extra minutes because he got extra time.
Okay, thank
We're
you.
We're fair, so don't worry.
Thank you. So as the ALJ did correctly construe the claim limitation, mathematically fitting an ellipse to one or more typical groups, the Apple does not dispute that under this construction, the ALJ's finding of non-infringement must stand. The ALJ's construction properly gives meaning to each word in the claim, in particular, the language mathematically fitted. As the ALJ noted, under Apple's proposed construction, the end, which is determining the ellipse parameter to describe an ellipse, would define the means, which is fitting an ellipse in the first place. And as Motorola's expert testified, the concept of mathematical fitting requires some kind of mathematical fitting algorithm based on some mathematical optimization function, such as best fit, to apply to a pixel group to construct a model. And this is found in the expert's report at 18256.
When the device undertakes the calculations, isn't the achieving of those calculations also achieve the fitting that we're talking about? We're talking really about a one-step process, not a two-step process, correct?
Well, I think that is not reflected in the preferred embodiment, Your Honor. In particular, in the preferred embodiment, particularly at the 628, starting at column 25, line 61, through 26, line 47, discloses the preferred embodiment for the fitting algorithm. And it is notable that certain parameters, in particular the centroid, the XY position at the bottom of column 25, are actually determined first. And then completely separately, the specification discloses or discusses the ellipse fitting procedure. So the concept of fitting an ellipse is in the specification itself distinct from the concept of simply finding parameters. And also, one of the inventors, Mr. Elias, stated in his testimony during the hearing at 83319, line 18, through 3320 through 10, at 10. I'm almost out of time, but I'm not sure. That the ellipse fitting procedure is actually through step 318. And it is only later, in steps 19 through 21, that the major, minor axis and the orientation are determined from the ellipse that is fitted. So fitting an ellipse, and it's just in keeping with both the claim language and in keeping with the specification, is a distinct process from simply calculating parameters. Now, it's certainly true that once an ellipse is fit to determine the approximate shape and size of the pixel data group that has that is once your hand is on the touch panel, then you would calculate parameters that are used, as discussed later in other claims in the patent.
But when you put your hand on the screen, the calculation of the parameters achieves a fitting of the lips before you touch, correct?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think the question is, it's sort of a chicken and egg kind of question. The question is whether or not you actually have to do a mathematical optimization, as Motorola's expert described it, and as one of, again, Mr. Elias stated in his deposition testimony, that the concept of fitting in the lips is actually trying to find a best fit. So it's not simply calculating parameters that can describe an ellipse. It is actually doing some sort of optimization model to fit in an ellipse data, and then from that you determine the parameters of that.
Isn't the claim mathematically fitting? So isn't mathematically fitting more about the parameter than not actually about the drawing the actual ellipse as a starting point?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think the question, again, the fitting, and this term mathematical was added during prosecution, because during prosecution, the examiner rejected over the Bessette reference, saying that you simply do calculations and measure parameters from the data, and the applicants themselves said, no, that's not correct. You have to do this mathematical fitting procedure, which, again, is, though mathematical certainly can mean, and I think that Dr. Wolf, Motorola's expert, explained it, mathematical fitting is, it's applying a mathematical fitting algorithm.
Okay, let's look at the patent for a second and walk through this, because it seems like, you know, you've described it as a chicken and egg problem, and I think that's an apt metaphor, because really this is about, you have to draw the circle first and then find the parameters, or is this just about finding the parameters? That seems to be what this is about. So let's look at figure 16, if you don't mind. You would say, if I understand your argument right, that what is labeled 242, mm-hmm. parameterized electrode group. Am I understanding correctly that that is what everybody seems to agree, or at least what you all represent, is sort of where the mathematical fitting of an ellipse is occurring?
I think, yes, Your Honor, and it's sort of the figures are related. I would also point, Your Honor, to figure 18, in which this the image segmentation process of 241 is more fully fleshed out.
241 or 242?
Or
you mean 242, right?
No. So the image in figure 16, the image segmentation process, which then leads to the parameterized electrode group in 242, is more fully fleshed out in figure 18.
Okay, so I understand that. So 241, image segmentation, you think that's drawing the ellipse, and then 242 is extracting out the variable.
Correct, and that's shown in figure 18 on 588 and block 272, where it says fit ellipse to combined groups, and then the result is the parameterized electrode.
So what do you think fit ellipse to combined groups means then in your view?
Again, and it would be this parameterized best fit sort of
fit ellipse to combine groups, is that drawing the picture or is it extracting the variable?
I think that is the drawing the picture. I'm not sure if that's exactly what happens, but
But do you realize in the text, and in particular I'll point you to column 25, lines 54 to 56, it says the step of 272 of the segmentation process is to extract shape, size, and position parameters from each electrode group. So the description that corresponds to this figure expressly says that step involves finding the mathematical variable. So,
right, I agree. It's a very kind of on the line issue, Your Honor. And
yeah.
I think the ALJ correctly relied on the language of the claim as that the mathematical fitting, based on the testimony of both experts and the inventors themselves, is more than simply performing measurements of the electrode group and determining parameters. That fitting, the term mathematically fitting must mean something more. And again, I believe that it's supported by the specification.
Can I give you just 1 minute to address obviousness and in particular the failure of the ALJ to detail or explain the secondary considerations? I mean, industry praise and copying was clearly alleged, it's in the record, there's lots of detail about it, and the ALJ, he or she, I don't know which, didn't even address it. So what do we do with that?
I believe, Your Honor, that the ALJ did address it in a perhaps slightly roundabout way when he discusses whether or not their commercial success arguments are very much related to their industry trade arguments. And that, and I think that was perhaps their attempt to draw a nexus between the two, and that the touch screen was the thing that made it commercially successful. But the ALJ found that that's simply not supported by the record.
Well, I agree he addressed commercial success, but where did he mention industry praise or copying?
He did not explicitly, Your Honor.
Didn't the ALJ rule on the basis that there was a lack of nexus between the secondary considerations and the device as a whole, or rather the patent feature?
Right.
Is that our law in obviousness cases?
Yes, I believe so, Your Honor. As this court stated in Crop, a prima facie case of nexus is made when the patentee shows both that there is commercial success and that the product that is commercially successful is the invention disclosed. And here they did not show that the vast success of the undisputed success of the iPhone is tied sufficiently to the multi-touch feature, which their expert, when even giving examples of what that is, simply talked about pinch to zoom. That one feature of the iPhone is the thing that made
it. But in Cross, isn't that claiming the entire shoe? That's a case involving the entire shoe.
Well, and I think that's kind of the point, Your Honor.
The ALJ in this case said that there was no nexus to the patent feature.
Well, right, Your Honor, and I think the reason, and that's why Apple's reliance on Crocs for its contention that as long as you show commercial success, you've shown a nexus, as long as the product practices the invention, you've shown a nexus is not apt here. It's because there are so many different features in the iPhone, many of which could contribute to its success, that picking this one feature out without showing how the commercial success is tied to it is simply not sufficient.
What about the ALJ's? He seems to have evaluated the first three obviousness factors, and then, in his opinion, in A216, before ever talking about the objective indicia, he says, therefore, the ALJ finds that the evidence clearly and convincingly shows the 607 patent is obvious. It seems that he has really violated our law, which has repeatedly said, you have to evaluate all four factors. And he didn't. He reached his conclusion, then he looked at the commercial success only without even considering the other secondary considerations. Why shouldn't we vacate and remand, which we've done every time we've seen a case that looks like this, where it seems like they made their decision on the first three factors and virtually ignored the others afterwards, saying such a strong prima facie case, secondary considerations simply couldn't ever overcome this. We've repeatedly said that's not the right approach to take, that you have to consider all four factors. So whether he's right or wrong about outcome, why don't we vacate and remand procedurally and say, go back and do this correctly?
Well, I think he did not, even though, again, the language of the idea is perhaps less than ideal, he did not ignore the secondary considerations in making his determination. He did do an analysis of them for...
Well, you say he didn't ignore them, he did an analysis of them, except he admitted that nowhere in his analysis does he discuss two of the three of them, including the one they rely most heavily on.
That's
a problem.
I have to admit that. However, I would also remind the court that the crisp finding of anticipation is independently dispositive on this patent, and if the court...
Except for Claim 10. All right. I think we better hear from
okay, thank you.
He's going to try and stand up and say all the same stuff he did. And so we left him a chance.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Your Honor. Dave Nelson, on behalf of Intervenor Motorola. So let me start with the 828, just because, you know, I think I can frame the issue a little bit, and the claim construction issue maybe help out the court. See, what we had below was an issue where what Apple was trying to do was assert this patent against a device that did not mathematically model an ellipse at all. In other words, there would be, for example, a centroid of a touch. Just figure out where the center of the touch is. And then later on, having no further information, a higher-level software would say, well, let me see if I can take and just assume that it's a circle with a radius of 1, for example. And that's what the ALJ was getting
at. But that works simultaneously, right? I mean, the software is working with the method.
In terms of the accused device, that's exactly what was not going on. And that was why the ALJ really addressed this issue. Because he said the underlying chip, the underlying hardware, and it's undisputed, this was something that their expert acknowledged, Mr. Balakrishnan, you'll see this at A30682 of the record during his testimony, but it was that underlying hardware was the only thing that had access to the actual touch data. Right? And so what this patent is about is to take that touch data and model an ellipse for that touch data so that you can pass that on to other layers and have an accurate model of that underlying touch data. So that's why the ALJ was saying you need to actually fit an ellipse, because there has to be, under this patent, an attempt to model an ellipse. In other words, take an ellipse, model it so that it minimally differs from your actual underlying touch data, an approximation, and then pass those parameters that describe the ellipse up. So I realize on appeal this has kind of morphed its way, because of the way Apple's tried to characterize it, into this idea that, well, first I draw and then I calculate parameters. That's not actually what was going on underneath.
But it seems like that's what the ALJ held the construction was limited to.
Now, if you actually read through what he did, it's 68 to 70 of his opinion where he walks through the construction and what the various arguments were. And then you'll see this again in his infringement treatment. I had that out of my bag. I had those sites for you, and I apologize. I don't have them at hand. Where he's walking through and going through the various constructions and is trying to figure out what the proper construction. You can see that that's why he comes to his conclusion, is because he comes to his conclusion because what he's trying to say is what you need to have is the minimization of the difference between your model ellipse and the actual underlying touch data. That's what's going on, is to model the ellipse. And so that's why he said you need to actually fit an ellipse and have the parameters that describe that ellipse so that you don't run into a situation. Let's take an example where the only thing that is calculated is the center. Right? That's all I know, is I know where the center of my touch is. Now, something later, the software, having no idea how big that touch is, it could have been, you know, a very large touch, it could be a very small touch, and says, well, let me just take that, because for my program, I want to draw a bunch of circles on the screen where the touches were. So I'll just draw a circle with a diameter of 1, right? You could certainly do that. I can take any information and tell me where the center is, and I can draw you a circle. And what he said is, that is not this patent, because it doesn't have anything to do with modeling the ellipse to the underlying touch data. And so, if you look at what was actually accused here, you see that that was exactly what was going on. And that's why the ALJ, when you look at the infringement section of his opinion, really got to this issue. That said, look, you have a situation where you're calculating the center and you're doing an error, which is just the number of channels that are reporting back. So there's no attempt in the accused devices, and this is under either construction, whether it be Apple's construction, which requires mathematically fitting ellipses to the touch data, or the construction that the ALJ had, which was a variation of the construction that we offered below, that actually took that data and modeled the ellipse here, because now what you have is you don't know what the shape of that touch is. Right, so you could have two touches, completely different shapes, that report back exactly the same parameter. So I haven't modeled.
This is like on page 64. What you're really talking about is rectangle versus ellipse, and how you could end up with the same mathematical parameters, but it could really fit either of these two shapes.
That's correct.
That's the argument you're making, right?
Yes, and then he continues on to 65.
Isn't it true that like none of you even vaguely recommended this construction? You say this is a variation of your construction. Your proposed construction was geometric parameters obtained from mathematically fitting an ellipse. What he adopted doesn't sound like a variation of your construction. It sounds to me like he rejected your construction and came up with his own.
Well, he certainly did the formulation. He came up with his own. The reason why he emphasized that first part, which is what everybody seems to be debating about, is for the exact reason that I just described.
Okay. And Apple and the staff seem to have virtually identical constructions proposed to him. Apple was parameters that describe an ellipse, and the staff was parameters that describe an ellipse, for example, position, shape, size, orientation, etc.
Actually, that wasn't what you have there is an older version. The staff proposed construction actually matched the Motorola proposed construction. It had to
I have his ALJ. This, I'm reading from his ALJ.
That was an earlier.
So in his opinion, he erred in representing what the staff was arguing.
No, he did it correct in the body of the opinion. That what you're looking at is from the appendix of the proposed construction. So what there's a particular way in the patent from the section you're just reading in column 26.
I think Judge Moore's point is correct that the construction that the ALJ arrived at was not proposed by either of the parties.
The wording of the construction absolutely was not proposed by either of the parties. The concept
and this concept of the two-step process, was that something that you argued before the ALJ?
It was the non-infringement argument. I do not believe that in terms of his application of his construction that he went through a two-step process. What he was doing was saying, look, I want to have a situation where whatever that touch date is, that there is an ellipse that's modeled with that touch date.
Did you argue a two-step process to the ALJ?
No, we didn't argue a two-step process to the ALJ. And as if you look at the infringement determination, I do not believe that that's... He was trying to emphasize this point with his construction that we need to have to that touch data. That touch data exists in one place, that's in the chip, that I need to create a model, an elliptical model of that. If I don't have that going on, it doesn't matter what happens above. And that's really what he was getting to, is that you need to actually make that model.
You've exceeded your time, and I want to be fair to you, but I have to balance this time as a group, because you all are splitting against this time, so I can't let you go much longer. Do you have one other point you might like to hit upon?
Sure. With respect to the anticipation argument, I think the question had to do with the incorporation by reference on the Morag reference. So there's two points with respect to that provisional term. The provisional actually says that I'm using the same sensing device, and my idea or what I want to do is use the same sensing device that's described in the...
Well, let's be clear. It says similar, not same. And a method similar to the method described.
You correct the method, but if we look at the 808, it says what it's talking about. They're both patents. Describe a sensing device that is capable of detecting multiple physical objects located on top of the flat screen. There's only one sensing device that's described in those patents. And in the 664 application, or excuse me, 662, I apologize. 662 was the Morag, what's been referred to in the record as the Morag app. It's at A16573, it begins with the record. There's one sensing device that's described in section 4, the technical description of that paper, and is shown in figure 1, the system block diagram, which is a sensing device that includes the center and the sensor and the electronics to interpret
the touches. Okay, I'm not following your point. What is your point?
Well, what I'm saying is that is the, and that's what Dr. Wolf pointed to.
No, Dr. Wolf said a method similar, and then he just, in a couple of sentences, described what the sensing device is in, as he understands it, in these two applications. He didn't say, and I'm incorporating this sensing device by reference or anything else.
Oh, you mean in terms of the application itself? Right, the application. I'm talking about Dr. Wolf, that was the underlying expert, his testimony. And one of the things we forget in the ITC proceeding...
Incorporation by reference is a question of law. This is the point upon which you are trying to hit. And I totally do not understand the argument that you're making. So take a second and try to figure it out and say it to me in a sentence if possible.
Yes. What I'm saying is that your question was, why is the sensing device incorporated through the provisional application, the sensing device that's described
in the absence of any words in the provisional that are the typical words that one would use for incorporation by reference, which is a question of law and guided by presumptions established in our case law.
Right, because it says that I use a similar method, and these patents describe that sensing device. The testimony from...
Is use of the word similar, I mean, is that enough in this case?
Well, I think it is. It is enough. Because the method is to use a sensor and then a front front end to interpret that along with the digital signal processing in order to determine what the actual touches are. So, yes, I agree. And that's the only testimony that we have in the record about this is from Dr. Wolf. And I know that Apple's represented that Dr. Wolf had one statement. But there were there was an entire claim chart that gave Apple element by element exactly what the incorporation, what it was from the Morag reference that was incorporated in.
Are you talking about the red line that Apple provided?
Excuse me?
Are you talking about the red line that Apple provided?
That was a comparison of the provisional to the issued Persky patent. So not that, but in terms of the proof. Because remember in the ITC, one of the...
Does your expert analyze what Morag discloses and why he thinks it's like what they need here? The problem is, and I don't have any problem with any of that, and I think even they might not want to, but they might say, well, even if we accept everything you're saying right now is true, it still doesn't satisfy the need to have expressly incorporated it by reference on page 16149, which you didn't do. So your expert's detailed element-by-element analysis of what is disclosed in Morag is all fine and dandy, but it's not here. It's not part of this patent. This is an anticipation reference.
Well,
maybe Mr. Rosenkranz will say something entirely different, but I think that's what he would say.
No, I agree with you, and I think that's what he would say. But the reason why I referenced Dr. Wolf's testimony is because that's the testimony that we have from one of ordinary skill in the art reviewing these applications as to what it would be.
Does one of ordinary skill in the art get to opine on a question of law?
Well, it would be like claim construction.
Oh, okay.
How they understand. We have to look at this from the perspective of one of ordinary skill in the art. And so that's the reason for that.
You're saying he said that when you say a method similar, you've incorporated something by reference. That it is his personal belief as one of skill in the art that that's enough in this particular art to incorporate something by reference.
No, that's not what I'm saying, Your Honor. Because I think that would be incorrect for him to opine to say, oh, that's an incorporation by reference. That would be a legal question. What he opined on is what he understood to be incorporated. When I read this of one of order skill in the art, it tells me that I'm going to use this sensing device. That's what's described.
Well, that may be his interpretation, but the document itself doesn't tell anyone specifically where the information is, by page, by line, by anything. It's simply a reference to technology, reference to a sensing device, generally. Isn't it? And that, according to our precedent, that's not enough, correct?
Well, that's why I think it is enough, because there's only the one sensing. It's not a situation, and Apple hasn't pointed anything in the Morag reference where there are multiple sensing devices that are described, and there's some question as to which one we're talking about.
The problem, I think, for you is that this concept of incorporation by reference is not really the same as sort of concepts of teaching or suggestions or things like this in an obviousness context. It's either incorporated or it's not. It's either identified or it's not. And the public's entitled to have some certainty as to what we're talking about in terms of actual documents, pages, lines, text, etc., so that people don't have to make judgment calls as to what was intended.
And I think that's a fair point, and I think we do that here, and that's given the proceedings for Dr. Wolf to identify what he believed and what he understood from reviewing this to be the sensing device that was referred to and what was incorporated, and for Apple never to come back. This is why the waiver issue becomes very important. They never came back and said, here's what we think is not incorporated.
Okay, I think we better hear from Mr. Rosenkranz.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that.
Thank you. Mr. Rosenkranz, how about if I give you 5 minutes, because they took a lot more than that, but if you don't need to use it all, don't feel compelled to.
I will try to be succinct, Your Honor. Let me begin by correcting what I said to the court before about Nexus. Nexus was all over our opening brief, pages 22 to 24, three full pages, encaptioned with the title, New Touchscreen Spurs the iPhone's Success. And so that was in our statement of facts, and we're referring back to that in our argument at pages 52 to 53. We discuss the ALJ's point about Nexus. We say that he's wrong because he misunderstood Crocs. Crocs says that you've got a product that practices and you've got commercial success, prima facie case for Nexus, and it's up to Motorola then to disprove Nexus, which they never even tried to do. And then on our reply brief, pages 13 to 14, we make that point again, and we also refer back to Nexus.
But where do you refer to Nexus on page 52 and 53 in your argument section?
It begins second. The ALJ also erred in holding that the required nexus between commercial success of the iPhone 4 and the specific features there were quoting covered by the 607 patent does not exist because, quote, the evidence shows that the iPhone's success stems from other product characteristics. And we explained Crocs, and we've already explained in three full pages.
Yes, but doesn't this hinge, because you actually don't seem to explain in this section that, for example, the nexus for the success is the touchscreen as opposed to iTunes or any of the other string of things that were enunciated by their expert. And you seem to hinge it all on your belief that Crocs stands for the proposition that once you have commercial success, you don't need to prove anything else. You seem to interpret Crocs as relieving the patentee of the burden of establishing Nexus altogether. Am I understanding that as your legal interpretation of Crocs?
That is how I read Crocs, and particularly in
how do you reconcile that with all the earlier cases pre-Crocs that say the exact opposite? The patentee has the burden of establishing Nexus.
Well,
I'll give you a few sites.
In part, Your Honor, because Crocs was an obviousness case, and so many of those other cases were not about obviousness. But the main point is that, again, particularly when you've got a feature as prominent.
The patentee has a burden to establish a prima facie case of nexus, correct?
Yes, but
isn't the argument here whether you have to show a nexus to the device as a whole, as opposed to the patented feature within a multi-component device?
I think that is what Crocs says, and particularly when the feature is as prominent as the touchscreen. I mean, this is not like the unified search function in Samsung. This is, which I do think was important, but this was an extremely prominent feature. Second point, just moving to Persky, if I may. Judge Moore was right. Persky was about something very different. I mentioned already the on-screen touch board. That is about successive touches. And with respect to the incorporation by reference, yes, I do embrace everything that Judge Moore said about the law, but I also have to emphasize that Motorola's expert, Mr. Wolf, if you look at page 18.413, his claim chart, he says actually only a portion of Persky was incorporated by reference. That was the portion that was about the sensor.
A portion of Morag, you mean?
Excuse me. Only a portion of Morag was incorporated by reference. That was the portion that was about the detection of the stylus. We're talking about a completely different portion of the patent. Persky, the ultimate patent, goes on at length about what you do with that data in the output device. Third, obviousness. Of course, again, I agree with Judge Moore, the ALJ did not do what this court said. At a minimum, there needs to be a remand to apply the secondary factors appropriately. And then finally, on unless there are other questions on what I've said so far, on mathematically fitting. So the equations are what does the fitting, and Judge Moore was right, I think, to call attention to step, the 272 on figure 18. The column, which is column 25, explains that last step is to extract shape, size, and position parameters from each electrode. As Valentine said, that the concept of fitting an ellipse is divorced from calculating parameters because two parameters are calculated before the fitting process. If you look at the testimony about the fitting process, it explains, and this is on page 7401, the guy who wrote the doctoral thesis that was incorporated by reference, that was almost fully cribbed in this patent, he explains that what happens at the top of column 26 is you are first calculating one set of parameters, two of them the centroid. You then use this covariance matrix
as an input to calculate the other three. That's calculating, that's mathematically fitting. It's calculating the parameters from
the data. Okay, Mr. Rosenkranz, I think we have your argument. We need to move on. I thank all the counsel involved. The oral argument was very helpful to the court today. This case is submitted.